What's up, my global basketball community? It's Penny Green, one of America's premier basketball aficionados. From Baltimore's back alleys and the rec centers of PG County to the bright lights of Madison Square Garden, this game gave me a blueprint for life. So fasten your seatbelt and take this ride with me through the players, the legends, the history, and the future. This is basketball culture with Penny Green. It's more than just a game. It's a culture. You're killing them, Slim. You're killing them.
Basketball culture.
The champion in you.
It's your boy, Penny Green. And I just want to say hello to everyone. I'm super excited tonight. I've been talking about doing a podcast for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. And I've had a couple guys call me up and say, Penny Green, I don't know what you do for a living, but you need to stop it and go produce a podcast. So I finally made it to the podcast room. I'm thrilled. I got my partner beside me, the Bundy, the Ali Bundy combination.
Tyrone, your conscience. Your conscience, your motivational conscience.
My motivational conscience. That's my guy. And out there listening is my other partner, Brian Yodell, the king of swing when it comes to parties in DC.
Yeah, you got to give him some credit or you're going to be in trouble.
No, my man B, strong as can be, motivate me every day, told me to stay focused on a regular basis. So I want to just have a shout out to him. I'm excited. The show today, we're going to talk about the game is not the same. I talked to so many brothers call me up saying that, you know what? I can't even watch basketball. Can't watch it. It's too strange. And so we're going to get into that. But before we do, I know how ball players are. They're like, well, Penny Green, who are you? And what gives you the qualifications to talk basketball? You know, the ballers are very critical guys, Tyrone.
Absolutely.
They rough.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to, you know, follow in on you and just say, look, I'm waiting to hear this introduction. I mean, clearly everybody wants to know, you know, who is this guy called Penny Green or P. Green? I mean, Penny Green.
You know, before Penny Hardaway, there was Penny Green.
And before any dollar starts with a penny.
Okay. So let's do this. Okay. Now, I know there's a thin line between confidence and cocky. Now, I think I could be teetering on the edge, but I like to believe it's confidence.
Well, you know, I like the way you say that, but I think when you're on the court with a ball in your hand, it's a little cockiness going on.
That's true. You got to feel good about yourself.
You got to.
Okay. So I grew up in Southeast Washington, D.C. and West Baltimore until about the age of 14.
Wait, hold it. Southeast D.C.
Challenging environment.
Mm, and Baltimore.
Very challenging environment.
Okay. So I like to hear this story. Baltimore and D.C. You got to be more careful.
Okay.
And then D.C. Okay.
Put like this. My mother saw the writing on the wall. You know what I mean? I was gravitating toward that life that was, let's just say, not on the straight and narrow. So she moved us to Prince George's County. It was a breath of fresh air.
Wait a minute. You saying it was a breath of fresh air. But I like to hear that story from B-more to Southeast. Now you're in PG County.
Well, it's backwards. I was in Southeast first.
Okay.
And then I went to West Baltimore.
Okay.
Okay. And then we ended up in PG County.
Hmm. Boy, some ballers out there.
Yeah. So I was in some very, very competitive environments. You know what I mean?
Yes, you were.
And as a young man, my mother bought me some boxing gloves. You know, I came home one day with my eye hanging out my head. She said, you might need to practice your boxing. So, no. I get to PG County. It's lovely. I started playing ball under some guys who were very dynamic. At the time, I didn't know, I went to a ball game and they played against St. Anthony's with John Thompson. They were on an 18-game win streak. They were number one in the country. Chink Gray, Jeff Briscoe, George Randle, Gary Silver.
Wait, hold it. Whoa. That's the one thing people got to learn about you. You are not just a historian. You're a curator. You coming up with names that most people would have no idea who you're talking about. But step back. Out of all those names, which one of those ball players really caught your eye?
Well, Jeff Briscoe was first team All-Metropolitan, and Parkdale was ranked number two in the area that year. They won the state championship. But the point guard, Chink Gray, took me under his wing. And when I went to visit the neighborhood, they were trying to give me a hard time. They didn't know I didn't have any fear, but they thought they were putting fear in my heart. But Chink took me to the side, mentored me. And when I saw them beat St. Anthony's, and I knew I played with them on a regular basis, I had a lot of confidence. I said, if I'm playing with guys that just beat the number one team in the nation, and I'm competing with those guys, I have to feel pretty good about myself.
Okay. Well, tell me more.
So as a young man, I wanted to go. My mother saw my interest in sports. It's basketball. So she sent me to camp. First camp she sent me to was American University. So I got to meet Tom Young, who went on to have a great career at Rutgers.
Wait a minute. American University, for those who are out of state, maybe those in another country, tell them where American University is located.
American University is in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And at the time, they had a gentleman who holds the record, NCAA record, for most. He had 20 rebounds and 20 points a game. His name was Kermit Washington.
So now you've proven my words of you being a curator, not just a historian. So tell me more.
So Tom had a camp up in the Pocono Mountains. And other coaches that were with him that day, and of course, as a young man, I didn't know, but 20, 30 years later, I realized these are Hall of Fame coaches. There was Dr. Tom Davis, who ended up at Boston College in Iowa. There was Will Jones, who won a Division II championship. And so those are the kind of people I was exposed to. I was at Lefty Giselle's camp with Lefty and George Ravelin. So as a young man looking back on it,
Time out. As a coach, I got to use the word timeout. So that's how I'm going to get your attention here.
No, I get you.
You using Lefty, Drizelle, and George Ravelin in the same sentence?
Those are people who taught me the game of basketball.
So let me repeat the words again. Tell me more.
So I go into high school, and my high school coach is Stan Kernan. And at the time, I didn't realize it, but he taught us fundamentals. He was very sound. You had to play defense, and he knew the game of basketball. Later on, I found out that he was part of a team at McKinley Tech called the Fabulous Five, and they won 38 straight games. He also is in the Louisiana Hall of Fame when he played at McNeese State. So here's another person that touched my life who was a basketball savant.
Well, I mean, you got quite a little, I say little, but that's an understatement. You got quite a background here.
No, I'm trying to let people know where my credibility comes from when I talk the game of basketball.
Oh,
I'm not just talking.
When you use the word curator to describe a person, that really puts you in a new league.
No.
But okay, now that we've gotten past that part of who Penny Green.
But I'm not done yet.
Oh, you're not done.
I got more to tell you.
Okay.
I'm gonna try to speed it up, but I need people to know, because you know ball players, it's like, well, who is this guy, and what makes him think he can talk basketball?
When we do the next show, I'm wondering how you're going to be for person.
This is the first show, so I have to set the groundwork for the future.
But I can only imagine your second and third show is going to be listened to by millions of people.
No, no, I don't have to talk about myself as much in the next show. You know what I mean? But I got to establish who's who and what's what. So wait a sec. I'm at Parkdale. Kernan won 2 state championships, boys, 2 state championships, girls. Only coach in the history of Maryland basketball to do that. And Kernan...
Wait, hold it. You used the word only.
Only, as in one. Precedent.
Oh.
So this is the kind of coach
even today.
To this day.
Ooh.
Great coach, great player. So the beautiful part is, coach didn't give nobody the green light. Everybody was just a team-oriented scenario at Parkdale.
No one got the green light.
I ran the light, okay? No one got the green light, so I had to run it.
So you got the green light.
He didn't give it to me. I ran it. I took it.
That tells me something about you.
But he was okay with it.
That means you saw the ball and you never saw a shot that you didn't like.
That's about right.
Okay.
And the thing is, a lot of guys shoot to shoot. You know what I mean? They just walk in the gym. They want to shoot everything. I was shooting to win. You see what I'm saying? So the day I ended up on the cover of the Washington Post sports section, I missed my first 4 shots. Then I went 13 for 15 the rest of the game. So I know how to get the ball.
Washington
in
Post.
The hole. There was a 500,000 circulation. Was about 500,000.
You mean Donald Huff took the time out?
Dude, that was a beautiful day. When I found out I had been on the cover of the Washington Post.
By the way, I shouldn't have mentioned that name without you telling us who Donald Huff is.
Donald Huff was a very important sports icon, sports writer, first black sports writer for the Washington Post. Icon. He really helped establish Washington brand as far as being a national brand in the city, nationally, I should say.
Okay.
Great man.
All right.
So I want to close that story out because when I found out that I was on the cover of the Washington Post.
Okay.
I went to the library to get the newspaper. I saw it. I put my feet up on the desk. I told one of the young ladies, go get me lunch. And I stood there and looked at the newspaper the rest of the day. I was done for the day. That's it. Exciting. So as we go from there, I get recruited by John Thompson, Hall of Fame coach. I end up
with John Thompson.
Hall of Fame, first black coach to win a national championship. I used to be upset because he used to come to my house and he would sit on the sofa and he would dent the sofa. He's a big man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, boy.
I was concerned he might mess up my mother's sofa, you know? Big man.
He went into a lot of houses and upset a lot of people there.
Okay. He was huge. Okay. And
God bless his soul.
Rest his soul. Yeah. And then I ended up going in South Florida following a guy named Bill Gibson, who was ACC coach of the year. So these are the two guys who recruited me. So I got to feel halfway decent about my game. And ACC at that time was the top conference in America. I go on to South Florida. I take them to the best winning percentage in 50 years. I got a standing ovation in the Garden, which was super exciting, especially seeing all the excitement around Madison Square Garden this year, seeing the parades and the parties and all the excitement. So I can say I had my greatest moment in the world's most famous arena.
In the Garden.
So all them ball players out there, they got all them accolades. When you get a standing ovation in the Garden, that's the top. That's the trump card. When I play that card, people get quiet. Because, you know, ball players, they all talk. Everyone talks. And when I hear them talking, I drop that card on the table, gets quiet.
I do have to say, I did go to the house that Penny built, and I saw you in the Walk of Fame.
Thank you. University of South Florida was kind enough to put me on the Wall of Fame.
Yes.
So it was 40 years removed, but better late than never.
Yes.
So that was a good move for my career.
Yes.
I played against the best players in the world, Adrian Dantley, Hall of Fame, Moses Malone, Hall of Fame, John Lucas, number one draft pick in the 76 draft. Played against Parade All-Americans, Stacey Robinson, JoJo Hunter, Skip Wise, NBA guards, Eddie Johnson, Norm Nixon. So I played against the best in the world. All right, so that's my basketball career.
Okay.
Now, I jump out of basketball and I start becoming a curator. I start going to the Library of Congress and accumulating historical information. I put together a website, dcbasketball.com.
Okay.
The most comprehensive basketball website in the country. And I would take any place in this in the country to see if indeed they have a comparison. Then we have the fact that I appeared in Kevin Durant's documentary, three voiceovers, three appearances. So that really put me on the map. And lastly, I'm 21, 70 years old. I'm 190 pounds. I was 185 in college. At the gym, they call me Uncle Drew.
All right. We'll be back after that.
Institute was founded on a simple but powerful belief that the game of basketball can open doors to a much wider world. For many young people, the court is more than a place to compete. It is a classroom where discipline, teamwork, confidence, and leadership are learned. It is a place where young men and women begin to see possibilities for their future, both on and off the court. Through the Basketball Institute, we connect youth with a powerful network of former players, coaches, and mentors who have lived the game and understand the life lessons it teaches. These mentors help guide young people toward opportunities in education, athletics, careers, and personal development. But today we are at a critical moment to continue our programs and expand opportunities for the next generation. We need your support. Your financial contribution is more than a donation. Hey! It is an investment in young people who are striving for a better life. Your support helps us provide mentorship programs, educational resources, community engagement, and positive experiences that keep youth focused on their goals. In many of our cities, young people face powerful negative influence every day, but we believe there is always another path. A path built on encouragement, opportunity, and positive role models. Basketball Institute works to create that path. Hey, we provide an environment where youth can grow, learn, and develop a mindset built on confidence, respect, and determination. We also believe it is important to preserve the history of the game by introducing young players to the stories of the athletes, coaches, and community leaders who came before them. We help them understand they are part of something bigger. And when young people see themselves reflected in those stories, they gain the strength and inspiration to build their own future. An investment in youth is one of the most important investments anyone can make. Your support helps us continue this work and expand our impact. Please consider making a contribution today, volunteering your time, or becoming part of the Basketball Institute community. Together, we can ensure that basketball continues to be more than just a game, but a pathway to opportunity, leadership, and hope. Thank you for your support.
We're back. We're going to close out this episode on who Penny Green is. And in closing, I just want to say to all the listeners who are questioning the credibility, want to know the credibility of this guy, I've invested more than 10,000 hours playing this game and studying this game. This is why I'm very comfortable and feel very like I'm very qualified at talking about the game of basketball. Next, we're going to get into the game is not the same.
Well, and let me just weigh in on it. I mean, because that was an incredible resume. I mean, you had me on the edge of my seat. I mean, I was waiting for you to start shooting in here, you know. And of course, shooting the basketball, you know, should have put a ball in here. But then again, you got to keep balls out of your eyes because, like you say, there's a shot that you have, you know, you certainly don't see shots that you don't like.
Let's just put it like this. I still carry a basketball in my trunk.
Oh, my goodness. All right. So, Penny, the title. I mean, the game is not the same. If someone hasn't watched basketball in 30 years, what would shock them the most about today's game?
Well, you know, I get that call all the time from guys that say, I can't watch the game. It's just not the same. And they're so upset and so perturbed. And it's just so many things that have changed. But before we go into that, I just want to mention, I grew up in an era, the 70s, and my first hero was Oscar Robinson. And he was Bill Basic, but very efficient, you know, head fake, back you down, strong, okay? So when you look at a guy like that, that's what all the coaches wanted you to be. But as time in the early 70s, coaches were starting to let you free will, and your style of play was starting to become a little more relaxed. And people's personalities were starting to come through in their games. So I looked at, when I was a kid, the interesting thing was watching the scoring title fight between Pete Maravich, who was slick as goose grease, okay, had a lot of tricks, he was very flamboyant. A Midwest guy like Rick Mount, who was basically shooting on a barn, you could tell all night, every night, never missed a jumper. Calvin Murphy, who was an East Coast guy who was 5'9", won a baton contest, won gymnastic contest, and played basketball. Very diversified portfolio. And then Austin Carr, who was a Washingtonian who grew up on River Terrace Playground, and he was so, asked him what his nickname was, they said Speedy because he was so slow. Okay. So watching these guys are the guys I was watching coming up. And so players were starting to play with more style and more swag. Just to give you an example, Pete Maravich, this guy wore the same socks from junior high school to the pros. Floppies, I mean, very superstitious. I mean, that's very unique. You wore the same socks for 20 years, okay? And he had the floppy hair and the fast passes, a full court pass behind the back. It was always something really flamboyant about his game. Then there was Walt Clyde Frazier. He was driving around in a Rolls Royce. He had a big brim hat, and he was on every fashion magazine. So people's personalities were starting to come through the game. And then, of course, there was Dr. J, Julius Erving. He had the big afro, and when he flew through the air, his afro, like, fluttered in the air, you know?
Okay.
Then you had Calvin Murphy, small guard, big energy, lightning quick, fearless attitude, and he could shoot the ball. You know, they talk about Steph Curry, the greatest shooter in the history of the game. Well, Calvin Murphy shot 95.8 from the free throw line 1 year. And Calvin was in about 17 fights. And I remember a fight when he jumped up and punched Sidney Wicks in the face, who's 6'9". He's 5'9", so he had to jump up just to punch him in the face. So these are the kind of guys I'm watching on the way up. Don't forget Archie Clark. Archie Clark was the originator of the crossover dribble before Isaiah Thomas, before Tim Hardaway, before Pearl Washington. Okay. Archie was crossing folks up, twisting ankles. Nobody even know who Archie Clark is. And last but not least, the guy who I really idolized was Earl the Pearl Monroe. In Philadelphia, they called him Black Jesus.
Okay.
He would, his move was the spin move. And I actually met him and I perfected his spin move. And I walked up to him and I said, Mr. Monroe, can I say hello to you? He said, how you doing? I said, I want to tell you something. He said, what's that, son? I said, I perfected your spin move. And to this day, I haven't found anybody that can check me. He started laughing. He didn't know I had met him 15 years earlier when he was playing for the Baltimore Bullets. They came to Cole Fieldhouse. They were transitioning from Baltimore to Washington. I was hustling Coca-Colas. So I go knock on the door, knock, knock, knock. And Gus Johnson comes out. He says, how can I help you, kid? I said, could you get Earl Monroe for me? They said, Magic, some young kid out here wants to talk to you. He came out, showed me some love, and then he walked off into the distance with the two most beautiful women I've ever seen in my life. And I said to myself, I want to be Earl Monroe.
So let me ask you, I mean, you named a lot of, those were a lot of legendary names.
Yes, sir.
So out of that era, because you spoke 70s a lot.
Yes.
So out of that era, which one of those players you feel would fit in today's game?
Well, that's a good question. I think they all fit.
They're all
because,
fit.
You know, a lot of guys talk about, I get calls from young guys, they try to heckle me. They call Penny Green, you know that the guys today couldn't play with the guys of yesterday. They're more athletic. They're more skilled. You know what I tell them? If you can play, you can play. I don't care if you're fat. I don't care if you're skinny. I don't care if you dribble all right-handed or all left-handed. If you can play, you can play.
Right. You're
in a game with basketball, it's a game with deception. So if a guy's more athletic and can jump, you just give him a head fake. He jumps out the way. You lay the ball in. So my personal opinion is that if you can play and you have skills, they could play in that era or in today's era.
So let me, as a coach would say, time out.
Yes, yes, sir.
But using those players of today or those names of today, because you just mentioned it, which one of those players in today's game can play in the 70s that you feel could
well, once again, win? I think it's ironic because the young guys talk about the skill of today's players.
Okay.
And the athleticism.
Okay.
But the players of today, there's the four MVPs, four out of the five MVPs.
So hold on. Uh-huh. You before we can get there, skill and athleticism. Mm-hmm. Of a guy that's playing today that would be playing with the guys in the 70s. Something that you and I know for a fact. You won't be high flying, coming through the middle, laying the ball up, and nobody's touching you. Remember the way fouls were carried out back in the 70s opposed to today. Man, they'll probably break your forearm.
No, it was vicious.
Can you imagine? I'm going to just bring a name out. Someone that you know that was pretty physical. But can you imagine someone like Wes Unseld standing there waiting on you to lay the ball up? I mean, God bless his soul. But do you know what this guy would have done to one of the smaller guards that's coming up to do a finger roll?
Well, once again, the game has changed because the game was inside out, and now it's outside in. So the court's more spread, so it's easier for the little guy to get close to the basket. In the 70s, the closer you were to the basket, everything was about getting closer to the basket. So it was more physical. It was more vicious. And I never forget when Karl Malone hit Isaiah Thomas upside the head. And he had a concussion, and they interviewed him after the game. And he said, what are you asking me? What do you want to know? Came to the basket. I stopped him. Okay. So it was a whole different game. It was more vicious.
So what's your thought on someone like Moses Malone and his era?
Moses was one of the most consistent rebounders in the history of the game. He won the rebounding crown several times, and he just had a motor that was relentless. And I was fortunate enough to play with Moses coming out of high school. And you know, he won the NBA championship 4-4-4, four times in four different series, and they swept all four series.
Okay.
But he was just relentless. He just had a high energy level, and he was a Hall of Famer.
Okay. Well, get back to where you were.
Okay, no problem. So as we were talking, the ABA emerges.
Okay.
They end up playing against the NBA. And ABA guys like George Gervin, Iceman, used to tiptoe around on the court. He wouldn't sweat. He would throw finger rolls from like 10 feet away. Of course, you know Dr. J was flying through the air. Guys like Roger Brown from New York, who goes, you know, doesn't get a whole lot of shine, but he was a beast, won a couple
NBA
championships.
What about your homeboy? And when I say your homeboy that played in your home team in D.C.
Who's that?
Rick Barry?
Rick Barry was interesting. He shot 90% from the field, and he shot all his free throws underhand. These are the kind of personalities that were emerging from the ABA. David Scott, Walker Thompson, Connie Hawkins.
Well, it looks like another break is coming up.
No problem, sir. We're rolling now.
So we'll take a timeout, and we'll be right back.
Every business wants more visibility, more customers, and more opportunities to grow. Now you can put your brand in front of one of the most passionate sports audiences in the Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia region. Advertise with DCBasketball.com, the trusted online home for the history, culture, players, coaches, and traditions of basketball throughout the DMV. In 2025 alone, DCBasketball.com generated more than 37,000 unique visitors, 52,000 website visits, over 81,000 page views, and more than 800,000 website hits. That's year-round exposure to athletes, coaches, families, alumni, and basketball fans who are actively engaged with our community. Whether you're in real estate, healthcare, legal services, restaurants, automotive, education, retail, financial services, or sports and fitness, your next customer could be just one click away. Reserve your banner advertising space today and put your business where the DMV basketball community comes together. Business gets seen.
We're back at ya.
So, you know, here's a good question, because I like what you're saying about the 70s, and, you know, clearly it merges into the 80s, but did we lose something while making the game better over the years? I mean, now it's 2026. So did we lose? Is it something obvious to you that we have lost something to make the game better? Is it that we lost speed? Is it the skill? Is it the fundamentals? Is it the toughness that we lost? Creativity or team basketball? Because, you know, we always talk about team basketball, and I'm gonna make this a twofold question.
Tough questions.
And that is, you know, if we could bring one thing back from the 70s or the 80s, what would that be?
Well, you're hitting me with a lot of tough questions, but I would say that the evolution of the game, as the personalities and the ABA immersed into the NBA, and, you know, the game started getting a little physical, like in the 90s with the Nays to beat up Mike Jordan, and Detroit and Chicago used to battle. But, you know, the interesting part is the game has changed, but it hasn't changed, because the best players in the league today are skill players and not athletic players. The Shea Butter and OKC with the mid-range grain.
Okay.
The Brunson, you know, with the tippy-toe jumper. You know, he's not jumping out to gym. The Joker in Denver. And Luka these guys are considered probably 4 to 5 best players in the game, and they're not outrunning you, they're not out jumping you. But when I look back at the game, it's an evolution. You know, is you know, it's like things come and go. At one time, the little man was hot. You know, Michael Adams, Dana Barrows, Muggsy Bogues. Then they go away. At one time, the big guard's hot. So there's different trends that take place. Now, today's game is a different game because when we played in the 70s, everybody had a role. Mm-hmm. You had a point guard. His role was to make sure the offense got good shots. He was a coach on the floor. Then you had the scoring guard who, you know, basically shot the ball. The small forward was versatile. He would score and or rebound. The power forward was tough, offensive rebound, get put backs. In the center, he dominated the low post. He made sure nobody ran through without catching an elbow going through. Don't come mm-hmm. through here again, okay? Mm-hmm. Go around the other side. And today's game, where all players do all things. I mean, back in my era, if you shot a 25-footer and missed, you knew you were going to sit down because it was inside out. Today's game is outside in. So okay. A guy like Tony Parker could lead the league in points in the paint because the floor is spread out. Okay. And let's also look at math. You love math and you love science.
Yes.
A lot of guys will get under the basket and throw it out to the three-point line. But mathematically, if you shoot 33% from three, it's more efficient than shooting 50% from two. So ooh. The game has spread out. There's more room. And it's more of an entertainment value we're trying to create.
So with that said, here's another great opportunity for you to really weigh in on something. What is it that stats can't measure? Because the game is driven by stats, man. Well, so what is it?
The first thing that I think of when you say that is leadership.
Ooh.
I just saw the San Antonio Spurs lose a 29-point lead to the New York Knicks. They came down and took 12 three-point shots in a row.
Did you see that game?
And missed all 12. So when I played, I would have got the ball, asked my teammates, have you lost your mind? We need to get a better shot. Let's pass, pass, pass. Let's work the clock down some and get a high percentage shot. I think the number one thing that's missing is leadership.
Could that have been also a matter of a low basketball IQ?
Yeah, basketball IQ is basically...
that they didn't know to slow the game down. I mean, could it have been the moment?
No.
Caught in the moment?
It's just they run and shoot and jump. Uh-huh. They're athletic and they're on go. They're not thinking the game. They're not thinking, what do we have to do to win? Just like you go to war, okay? You know, it's war. How do I win? How do I come back alive, okay?
So I know, you know, time is running out on us. We're getting to a point, and I want you to make another point based on your introductory. And that is to say, the game of basketball has been good to you. I mean, very good to you. It's obvious it has helped you to define your lifestyle and your legacy. I just want to know, what is that one lesson that every young person will carry for the rest of their life that you see that basketball can teach them?
Well, basketball is, first of all, it teaches you how to analyze things, okay? When I got on the basketball court and I could dribble with my right, but I needed to dribble with my left, okay? Mm-hmm. So the game of basketball will prepare you for life, academically, business. You have to learn how to prepare. You have to learn the importance of repetition. And if you're not a good reader, and if you read the comic strips or sports, as long as you read something, you can become a better reader. So the importance of repetition. So a lot of the templates for success on the court manifest themselves in life. But I want to close the show out with one thing that's real important that I want to point out, I want to get across. It's the, hey, the game is not the same. Let's go over the list of things that really make the game different, which upsets a lot of the older brothers where they can't even turn the TV on, or if they do, they got to put their hands over their eyes because they can't watch.
Is this your basketball IQ coming out?
Okay, ready? The moving screen. A guy can jump from right to left when you're coming off to take a shot. That makes life a lot better, okay? A moving screen. It used to be you have to stand there, be stationary. Now screens are everywhere. The Euro step, really sporty. Basically, when I played, they called that a walk. You're taking three steps to the back. Okay? How about the step back? You stop, you step back, or you step to the side. In my day, if you couldn't jump over a guy, you were in trouble, okay? The flopping, the acting, like you do instant replay and you find a guy fall on the floor and you go to instant replay, you find out no one even touched them, okay? When a shooter went up for a shot, you had certain airspace now that you can't come in, or they call it flagrant. When I used to go up for a shot, there were guys underneath waiting for me, trying to make me twist my ankles, okay? And then if you're a big shot like LeBron or Greek or even most players, they can actually run over you. They can get ahead of steam, bump into you full speed. That used to be a charge. All these things are enhancing the offense, which make older guys not want to watch the game. But what they don't realize is capitalism. It's entertainment value. Okay, those owners got to feel the skybox. They got to get people into the skyboxes. So offense is king. It rules. Everything is in favor of the offensive player. Okay. So it's really difficult for the old school guy to watch these changes. And I get it. I hate on them a little bit myself, because if I had those things, I would probably average about 35 instead of 25. As a matter of fact, I think they should put an asterisk beside 3 points in record book. Because I shot three, but they only gave me two. I want my points.
That's the evolution of the game.
They say the only thing that's constant in life is change. Don't hate the youngins. Watch the game, engage, enjoy it, and the other stuff, just close your eyes.
Well, now, you know, I'm very enlightened, especially on the way you have explained a lot of these changes over time. But out of all those changes, what is the one that really pulls your emotion that you just can't stand to see?
I can't take it. Well, I got a lot of charging fouls. I was a very aggressive player. And when I see a guy build up a head of steam and the other guy's running, trying to get away from him, and he runs over the guy who's trying to get away, and the guy who's running away gets called for a foul. I mean, can you imagine LeBron James coming at you at 6'8", 260?
Depending on what day.
Okay. And you're trying to run away from him, and he runs his body up against yours. I'm sure I would get an assault charge. I'm sure I'd be waiting for him in the parking lot. Okay. I'm sure. I'm trying to get away from you. You run over me and I get the foul. So it's hard for me to stomach that, but it's the evolution of the game. And I do understand they want to see points scored. Americans like to see points. You know, they equate that to success. And it's just tough for the next generation to deal with it. But, you know, I'm okay with it. I've adjusted. You know what I mean?
It's the game we love.
No, it's been very good to me, basketball. It's changed my life. It's exposed me to things that I've never been exposed to. And I love the game of basketball.
So what do you want your audience to remember you by after this show here? What can they expect the next time around?
Well, we're just going to try to, you know, probe into all aspects of the game, from fashion to NBA to high school to college, to rule changes, to salary caps. We want to get into every facet of the game and keep the shows fascinating, keep them fun, lighthearted, and, you know, it's basketball culture.
Boy, well, I tell you, I'm looking forward to these details and certainly moving forward in this basketball culture of yours. We have a great day, and I know that time is about to wind up on us. And, you know, as a coach, a player myself, and having that opportunity to also experience Baltimore and D.C. and PG County, not in the way that you experienced it, but clearly I had my own ways, and mainly in D.C. To experience, but to roam around the country and see the game of basketball in places like Texas and California and Florida and, of course, New York and New Jersey and Massachusetts. And I hope I haven't left everyone out, but here's P. Green. Take it out.
No, in closing, I just want to say thank you so very much. And we'll look to see you next time.
Attention homeowners and business owners throughout Georgia. Are outdated windows, excessive heat, and rising energy costs affecting your home or business? Then it's time to call Smart Windows GA. Serving homeowners, churches, retail stores, offices, and commercial properties across Georgia, Smart Windows GA specializes in energy-efficient replacement windows, residential and commercial window tinting, custom entry doors, patio doors, and professional commercial storefront glass systems. Whether you're upgrading your home, enhancing your office, renovating a retail location, or improving a commercial property, Smart Windows GA delivers quality craftsmanship and professional installation you can trust throughout Georgia. Our window tinting services help reduce heat, glare, and harmful UV rays while improving comfort and energy efficiency. Need a new storefront for your business? We provide beautiful, durable, commercial storefront glass systems designed to help businesses across Georgia make a powerful first impression. From homes to offices, from churches to restaurants, from retail centers to commercial buildings, Smart Windows GA has Georgia covered. Call today for your free estimate, 770-3744-750. That's 770-3744-750. SmartWindowsGA.com. Smart Windows GA. Replacement windows, window tinting, commercial storefronts. See clearly, save more, live better.
Okay, so I just want to thank everybody for tuning in. 6 minutes. We got 6 minutes?
6 minutes.
Okay, it's on and popping. So I just wanted to say we're back, and I'm loving every minute. I got my partner over here, Tyrone Tate, keeping me revved up, and we're talking some good basketball talk. We went back to the 70s, to Earl Monroe, the George Iceman Gervin. And by the way, you know, Fatty Taylor from D.C. actually gave him his name, Iceman.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they said he would come back at the end of practice. He wouldn't be sweating. Everybody on the team was sweat, but him, Iceman.
Ooh.
Yeah, bad man, Ice. And so I wanted to also, in closing, tell you what I've seen. It's quite a dilemma for me. We talked about the guys running over each other.
Okay.
Like, but every team, it's a trend that every team does pick and roll. And every team switches to pick and roll. Now, if I paid a man $30 million a year, you need to get through the pick and stick with your man. Okay? It's too easy. So now you get the mismatches, the big man on the little man. Okay? Once again, creates more offense. Okay? But I see these long scoring droughts because with pick and roll, you have to have a certain IQ. You have to have a certain feel for the game. You have to be able to have a certain rhythm, okay? And what happens with the pick and roll is that over time, sometimes it gets stale. I saw Orlando this year go almost 20 possessions without scoring. I've seen teams going through these long scoring droughts running the pick and roll. If I was the coach and I have certain plays for designated players, putting them in their sweet spot. So when I run into those droughts and we can't score, I can still get the ball to the person who needs the ball versus depending on my teammates to figure out my team to figure out how to get the ball to the right player.
So with those mechanics in place, what do you feel about these recent trades? I mean, do you think they'll be able to pick up on the pick and rolls and take advantage of them?
No, I think it's part of the game. The pick and roll is part of the game. The mismatches is part of the game. I do think it's great for the NBA to be able to have all the trade action moving here from there. But the whole Jaylen Brown piece threw me off, though.
It did?
Yeah. Jaylen Brown, that really was confusing to me because he was a great player. He was the MVP of the finals a couple years ago. He was the finals, and then he was the MVP of the championship game. So I don't know what else. And then when Jason Tatum got hurt, he actually carried the squad to the second best record in the East. So why would you look to trade him? I don't know. Was it salary situations? I don't know. Bad man, Jaylen Brown. As a matter of fact, I think he's the best player in the NBA.
Well, you talked about capitalism early on. Maybe it was a business decision.
Could be. I need to research that a little more because from what I'm understanding, you know, there's a lot of different conversations out there. It didn't sound like money. It sounded like some personal issues. You know, just because you are a general manager don't mean you can't get in your feelings. I remember certain teachers didn't like me. I was a kid.
I'm sure there were certain coaches that didn't like you as well.
No, my coach, he was a little frustrated.
I'm talking about the opposing coaches.
Oh, no. The opposing coaches, I was a madman. So I used to run by them. Like, they jump off the bench and say something. I say, coach, shut up and sit down. And, of course, the team guys who were on the bench were upset because they were on the bench. So they would laugh, you know what I mean? But that was not very smart. I wasn't as mature as I should have been.
Okay. Well,
but even my own coaches, you question, you know, they were scratching their head a few times, you know.
Well, you've done an excellent job defining and validating the title of being a curator.
Thank you, sir.
How do you take us out of this show today, considering we've had a great time, a lot of different discussions? What's next?
I just want to fine-tune this art of doing the podcast and delivering the message. And I want to make sure I bring relevant, pertinent conversations to the table that, you know, keep people interested. And at the end of the day, I want to have fun with it. And I starting out, you know, like at the bottom, coming out of the mud. What's the top show in this country?
I don't know.
Smoke?
Whoever's
the top podcast, basketball podcast, I'm coming for you. Okay.
You coming for him.
I'm relentless. This is day one. But trust and believe, I'm coming to the top.
All right. Well, take us on out because you got a few seconds to go.
Thank you so much for the audience joining me. Thank you so much for all the basketball community. And remember, we are one.
Tribute to the late great Petey Green. I tell it to the hot, I tell it to the cold, I tell it to the young, I tell it to the old. I don't want no lying, I don't want no crying, and most of all, no signifying. Remember, this show is dedicated to the champion in you. This your main man, Penny Green, signing off. Visit ballculture.com or call 770-374-4750.